Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On our program today, the vaccine dose delay debate.
I'd like to emphasize that NACI's core recommendation is that the complete two-dose vaccination series follow the authorized schedules for Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna.
How long should the provinces stretch the period between the first and the second vaccine doses in order to vaccinate more people? Quebec is pushing it, get this, up to 90 days. That's more than double the highest 42-day period that's already been studied. Are patients at risk because of a short supply? We'll bring in the doctor who is making Canada's vaccine recommendation, Dr. Caroline Kwok. She chairs the Public Health Agency of Canada's National Advisory Committee on Immunization. She's going to give us the latest on that. Then ramping up the rollout.
Doses arriving in Canada is anticipated to average more than a million doses a week for both currently approved vaccines, starting in April. This will signal our transition into this ramp-up phase.
All right, there it is. The government says vaccine delivery will ramp way up, a million doses a week, but it's by April. So what should Canadians do and what do Canadians need to get through until then? We're going to get the NDP leader Jagmeet Singh dropping by because he wants the government, one, to urgently recall Parliament, and he wants sick leave for all federally regulated workers. Could that happen? We'll find out in moments when he drops by. Plus, big business advantage. Ontario's stay-at-home order came into effect early this morning with alerts, you see it right here, going out province-wide. But businesses are sounding their own alarm. Do provincial regulations favor big-box retailers? The president of the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses says yes. Dan Kelly joins us with the details on that. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players. Well, Canada is set to receive 1 million COVID-19 vaccine doses every week starting in April. That is not an April Fool's joke. That is good news, but it's still months away, and cases are out of control across the country. Responding to the grim reality, the federal NDP are calling on the government to immediately recall Parliament in a virtual manner. The House of Commons is set to reconvene the last week of January, but Jagmeet Singh says the federal government needs to pass urgent legislation, for example, for 10 paid sick days leave for all federally regulated workers. What more, though, can the federal government do in this new period to enforce lockdown orders or, say, help the vaccine rollout? Isn't that all provincial jurisdiction? Mr. Singh joins us now with some details. I haven't seen you this year, so happy New Year to you, if we can say happy New Year when the country's struggling so hard, Mr. Singh. But why specifically do you think Parliament should be recalled early?
Well, a number of things. You mentioned paid sick leave. We're hearing more and more from experts that this is one of the single most important tools to keep workers safe in this time. People are still going to work sick. So with paid sick leave, we want to recall Parliament virtually as quickly as possible this Monday so that we can expand the existing program that we fought for, make it easier to access, get rid of some of the barriers that people are mentioning when it comes to accessing it, make it more flexible, and also look at ensuring all federally regulated workers are entitled to accessing paid sick leave. We need to do whatever we can in our power, in our jurisdiction, so that people who are sick are not going to work. Experts are saying this is one of the most important things to preventing the spread. Secondly, long-term care is still hard hit. We need to bring in more protection and supports for long-term care. And finally, small businesses, as you mentioned at the top, they're going to be hard hit as some of the stay-at-home orders in Ontario and the curfews in Quebec and across this country, the lockdowns and shutdowns mean small businesses are hard hit. While big box stores continue, small businesses need help. So we need to pass urgent legislation to get more help to small businesses, to support seniors in long-term care, and to make paid sick leave easier to access.
Okay, just let me just break those down. Let's just stay on paid sick leave, which has been a big issue. A lot of some paid sick leave outside of federally regulated industries, as you're talking about, is provincial jurisdiction. Some provinces, when you first have raised this, and the Liberals have raised it, they've said, sorry, we don't want to do that to small businesses right now. What do you say to that?
Right now, there is no question that people who are going into work sick have an impossible choice. Do they go to work sick knowing that they could risk spreading an infection to their coworkers? Or do they stay at home not knowing if they can make the mortgage payment or if they can put food on the table? That is an impossible choice. We need to get around any sort of barriers and get to the hard work of making sure everyone in our country can access paid sick leave so that workers stay home and stay safe. There's no question about it.
But, you know,
there cannot be any political maneuvering to make barriers when we know that this is important. We've got to get it done.
But they already had the sickness benefit, which gives people up to $1,000 for 2 weeks if they're in the quarantine situation. But now you've got to have a new legislation, probably going to take priority, because the Liberals said there was a loophole in it that people who are traveling for vacation, non-essential travelers, they say they don't want to access that sickness benefit. So would you like that to be a priority, or is that really the sickness benefit that you're talking about?
Well, the sickness benefit that we fought for is a form of paid sick leave. Absolutely, we should close any loopholes that don't cover the people that we want, that we don't want to cover. But while we make those changes, we can actually make it more flexible. Some of the concerns raised by experts is that someone who gets sick needs a couple of days to figure out if they are sick or not, to see if it resolves, and then they can go back to work. But not knowing if they can take off a couple of days at a time, the current way is you have to take a block of time. You have to take the full 2 weeks at a time. Well, that may not be necessary. Yeah. And so a worker doesn't do it, but they might need a day or two to figure out, okay, is this really some symptoms that I need to be worried about? That's actually something experts are saying would be very vital so people can make the right choice. A number of things in terms of the delay. Right now it works like EI. So you apply for it and you get the help after the fact. There needs to be a way to make it quicker so people can access it more immediately, which is going to encourage people to use it. It's also not very well advertised. A lot of people don't know that there is a federal paid sick leave available. So there's a lot of things we can do. And we're saying, let's bring Parliament back, given how urgent this is, and change the loophole. Absolutely close that loophole. But let's broaden paid sick leave so the people who need it most can actually access it.
Just a couple of things real quick. Do you think there should be an outright ban against non-essential travel? Right. Not just there's a recommendation now. I mean, you've had members of your party. Every party has. The Senate has. The provincial governments have. People are being told, stay at home, lock down, don't travel. But yet they can still travel. It's just a recommendation. Should there be a ban, in your view, on non-essential travel right now?
Well, what I think about, Evan, on this point is that we know that people are making massive sacrifices within the same city, within neighboring cities. People are not able to see their loved ones in hospitals. When there's funerals, they are not able to attend. So people are making massive sacrifices on one side, but international travel is so easy to do still. So there's got to be some similar application of how serious this is, that people are making massive sacrifices, loved ones are making sacrifices. We have to then clamp down on the impact of travel and acknowledge that travel is related and linked to the spread of this virus. So we have to look at not just international travel, but people are talking about interprovincial travel. We need to take this very seriously and find ways to limit our travel in a concrete way.
We're looking at the vaccine rollout. The blame game is going on, right? The provinces are saying the federal government's way too slow to somehow procure a federal supply of vaccines. Sometimes the federal government's saying, well, sorry, you guys are letting half of these things sit in freezers, and back and forth they go. But there are 13 different medical systems here. We've got, all sorts of different vaccine rollout strategies in the 10 provinces. Mr. Singh, do you think there should have been a single unified national vaccine rollout strategy? So the provinces don't do it themselves, but it's one single vaccine rollout that might allow, I know the federal government's procuring it, but also on the rollout, because clearly the rollout has been an impact on how fast and how much we're getting. Should there have been a national standard and a national rollout strategy?
Well, there absolutely needs to be a better role played by the federal government. The federal government is the only level of government that's in a position to provide leadership. They've got the resources, and there clearly has been a massive failure on the part of the federal government to even provide a clear plan. From the beginning, we said they didn't have a clear plan around vaccines. And it's shown that when you don't have a plan, clearly it impacts not just the procurement, but also the rollout. The provincial governments, when they look at Ontario, there's been some serious concerns raised about their rollout. But at the end of the day, the rollout and the leadership is very clearly a responsibility that the federal government can step up and provide leadership. There's jurisdictional issues, of course, but the leadership has to be provided at the federal level, and they can do a far better job of organizing and strategically planning out how this rollout happens.
But how? I'm just trying to figure this out. Procurement is a federal responsibility in this case. The rollout is clearly provincial jurisdiction. It's healthcare jurisdiction. It is in their purview. But so what exactly, from a concrete point of view, without stepping on the province's toes, who, by the way, don't want the federal government telling them how to roll this out, what exactly, in your view, then, should the federal government or could the federal government do?
They should absolutely be laying out a plan. This is a plan. Look at the plans that have worked in other countries. Provide the resources to assess and evaluate the plans that have been effective. We know countries like Denmark have had massive vaccination attempts or successful massive vaccinations. We look at countries that have worked and then roll out what does that plan look like and then provide some of the financial supports to help provinces with that rollout. But there's no question that the federal government should be able to provide a plan. And whether provinces take that plan or not, the leadership has to be provided at the federal level to show this is how it's happened in other countries. This is a way to make it work. And here's some support to provide the funding to make it happen.
All right. By the way, just on that, again, it's a jurisdictional issue, but on the long-term care home, just real quick, do you think there should have been national standards earlier at long-term care homes?
Absolutely. With national standards, this is just putting together what the learnings have been, what has worked and what has not worked, what has been an abject failure and what has helped us be more successful. And some of those things we know now, but we need to put them out there very clearly. The quality of the workers' conditions, when workers are well paid, when there's good staffing levels, and when we look at hours of work, not just of hours of pay, those are places, those are long-term care homes, right, which have been safer, where people have been healthier, where there is low work conditions, low wages, a lack of staffing, we have seen deaths. There's no question about it. We need to have national standards, not study it for a long term, but implement and put forward what have been the best practices, what have been the best guidelines, what works, and put those forward right away. And we need funding that is tied to clear Canada Health principles. The Canada Health Act lays out those principles. We don't want public money going to a for-profit long-term care home that ends up paying out dividends to their shareholders. That's wrong. So we need to have some clear guidelines around not funding for-profit, only supporting not-for-profit, and clearly these are the best ways to keep people safe.
Okay, I got to leave it there. Jagmeet Singh, interesting ideas. We'll find out after the two letters you wrote to parliamentarians to get the House back and on the long-term and on this paid sick leave for 10 days for federally regulated industries. That's Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP. Thank you, sir. Ontario's stay-at-home order is officially in effect, and Ontarians got this stay-at-home alert on the phones earlier today while the province logged 3,326 new cases of COVID-19. Now, the province is also planning a big box store blitz this week, and inspectors are going to be out in regions across the province, including the GTA in Hamilton, to make sure major retailers are following the rule. Let me bring in the Labour Minister, Monty McNaughton. He says the province is going to crack down on businesses that aren't following the rules, but how will it be enforced? And what about small business? Great to have you on the program again, Minister McNaughton. I want to get to the blitz in a second, but you just heard Jagmeet Singh, the federal leader of the NDP. He said they want national standards enforced with money on long-term care homes, not for profit. And he also believes from a jurisdictional point of view that the federal government should do more to basically take the leadership on the vaccine rollout. Would the provinces welcome federal government in provincial jurisdiction on those two issues?
No, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, Ontario's position, and I think all of the other provinces, we need more support from the federal government when it comes to funding for improvements to health long-term care across the country. But when it comes to the distribution of the vaccinations, we have General Rick Hillier, as you know, leading the plan in Ontario. And we're doing, a really great job getting it out now. We stumbled, obviously, in the first number of days over Christmas, but the machine is well-oiled, and General Hillier is doing a great job leading that.
Let me talk about this. So you got the stay-at-home order and the blitz. Dan Kelly, who's going to join us later, the president of the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses, he wrote this today. Ontario's doubling down on unfair and ineffective restrictions on small business. No other province, he says, has locked down small retailers while handing big, huge competitive advantages to big box stores. What do you say to that?
Well, look, I come from a small business background myself. Obviously, these are very, very challenging times. I think everyone would agree that COVID-19 hasn't been fair to anyone, not only in Ontario or Canada, but around the world. We've kept small businesses like retail, for example, open for curbside pickup and delivery. Look, my job as Minister of Labour Training and Skills Development is to ensure that the businesses are open, keep their workers safe. And we did launch a big box blitz. Our inspectors are going to be out on Saturday and Sunday, going to every single big box store in the GTHA, and we're going to roll this out across the province next week. But I'm going to make sure that they're following the rules. If not, we won't hesitate to shut big box stores down.
But big box stores, again, Dan Kelly saying big box stores are still, I know you're enforcing that, but like for small businesses, for example, they can't do curbside drop-off after 8 p.m. A restaurant can, but a small business can't. Amazon can do it, but a small business can't. How is that fair?
Well, look, these are challenging times for small businesses. I mean, we've rolled out supports like we've rolled out for families across the province every step of the way during this pandemic. We are working to keep businesses afloat, to keep them going. We just came out with a $20,000 grant for small businesses across the province. Again, look, these are challenging times. We've identified essential businesses, and my job as minister is to keep workers safe and to keep customers safe. And right. The sooner we can get through this, Evan, the better it's going to be for small businesses and for all the people.
Minister, are big box stores violating the rules? Is that why you're doing the blitz? Have they taken advantage of the situation?
Well, we're going out into every business that's operating during this pandemic and through this lockdown period. I want to make sure when it comes to the Costcos and Walmarts of the world that are supposed to be at 25% capacity in Ontario, if they're over that, then I won't hesitate to shut them down. I also want to make sure that the supervisors and managers are following health and safety protocols that we put out. I think, obviously, if any business is open today, it's a privilege for them to be able to serve the people, and they better be able to do it properly, or again, we'll shut them down.
Has enforcement been an issue, not just in the big box stores, but I have heard reports from various people, many of them, most of them who want to, frankly, remain anonymous, inspector people who say middle managers have said don't enforce the rules on construction sites, on other places. They're just saying they inspectors have been told just turn a blind eye, basically. Up to this point, has the enforcement been a bit toothless, and is that about to change?
No, I mean, I can speak about, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of inspectors we've had out every single day during this pandemic. As of today, we've done almost 35,000 inspections and investigations. We've shut down 55 job sites and workplaces. The most recent statistics out of the Workplace Safety and Insurance Board here in Ontario, there's been about 10,000 COVID-related cases in workplaces. So all in all, that's about 5% of all the COVID cases in the province. Businesses overwhelmingly have done a good job, but we want to send the message that we're going into places that are open today, the next number of weeks, and we'll make sure that we're keeping those workers safe.
All right, Minister McNaughton, great to have you on the program. I appreciate it. We're watching as everyone's trying to stay at home what this big box blitz is going to look like. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Evan.
Okay, that's the Labour Minister in Ontario, Minister McNaughton. We want to hear from you. Do you have thoughts on the program? How are you coping, by the way? Sometimes I just think we should stop all the politics and just ask you how you doing. People are getting the lockdown blues a bit. Let us know on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and email. It's going to be a long, long issue. But one of the ways out, as Minister McNaughton said, and we all say, is going to be the vaccine. But there is a shortage of supply, and that's why we are now facing a scientific face-off.
Jurisdictions may consider an extended interval between doses.
Should we be delaying the second dose of COVID-19 vaccines to get more shots in the arms of more people? Quebec is extending it. Lots of provinces are. but the chair of the National Advisory Committee on Immunization. They're in charge of this, is going to give us their stance. She joins us next. Stay right here with Power Play.
Our expert recommend that the second dose of the vaccine be given between 42 and 90 days. In our context, this is the best strategy because we have to deal with very few vaccines.
We're following the guidance of manufacturers and NACI in providing that second dose of the vaccine at 28 days.
The principle of increasing a dosing interval, I think, is not as problematic as decreasing the dosing interval based on the science what we know about vaccines in general.
The dosing delay debate, all because there's a shortage of vaccines. So how do you vaccine the most people as quickly as possible without making the double dose vaccines of Pfizer and Moderna less effective? Look, provinces are clearly, as you just saw there, charting their own course when it comes to the vaccine rollout. So you got Quebec choosing the route of delaying the second dose of the COVID vaccine to get people at least partially immunized up to 90 days. Others like Manitoba are saying, no, stick with how they actually experimented with it in the clinical trials. Two doses, 21 days apart for Pfizer, 28 days apart for Moderna. And other provinces are somewhere in the middle. The debate has been elevated to the level of the National Advisory Committee on Immunization and Canada's COVID-19 Vaccine Task Force, both falling on either side. So the question at hand, more shots and more arms but less immunity, or less shots and less arms but more immunity? Let's try to clear it up for you, because I'm probably as confused as you. Dr. Caroline Quash is the chair of the National Advisory Committee on Immunization, and they're in charge of all this stuff. Dr. Quash, first of all, great to have you here, and we all thank you for your tireless work on this, because this is all anyone's thinking about is the vaccine. From your new report from your group, says provinces can accelerate the number of people being vaccinated by delaying the second dose. But what's the safe zone? Delay by how much?
So that's the question at hand here. So what we did was to look at the data. I think I'll explain to you how we came to our conclusion, right? So we looked at the phase 3 trials from both Moderna and Pfizer, in which after one dose, there was already 90% efficacy starting 2 weeks after the first dose. That's good. We don't know, of course, how long that lasts. However, in those two trials, participants were getting their second dose of vaccine anywhere between 21 or 28 days, depending on the product, and up to 42 days. So already in those two trials, you have, those efficacy data are generated on people who got the vaccine between 21 and 42 days. Now, that being said, we also looked at equity, ethics, feasibility, and acceptability. And what we're saying is that, depending on what's happening in your province in terms of epidemiology, if you're in the midst of very high rates of transmission like Ontario and Quebec, you might benefit from giving more doses to more, one dose to more people at first, because it would seem unethical to keep half of your doses in your freezer for that second dose in 21 days. We said, just use them all up, and as supplies come in, use that second dose those incoming doses to give that second dose. We also know, based on immunology principles, that if in an adult person you need two doses of a vaccine, usually the second dose is there really to build your longer term immunity, but the first dose already gives you a pretty decent protection. And the longer the interval in between, usually the better the response. So what NACI said is that, because health is a provincial jurisdiction, is that each province needed to look at various elements that we outlined in our recommendation to then decide when to vaccinate. And we said that, given the data, we would prefer that dose is given within those 42 days.
42 days. But then Quebec is saying, well, we're going to go all the way out to 90, which is more than double your recommendation. And then the task force wrote an op-ed in the Globe and Mail with a whole laundry list of reasons not to change these double dose, mainly that the vaccines are based on the RNA technology, which has never been tried on humans before. Quote, we should not therefore lightly tamper with approved protocols. This is what they're writing, that are based on rigorous experimentation. They say that provinces should stick to what the drug companies have actually done the trials on and not sort of tamper with that. So now Canadians are kind of like, I don't know who to believe. What do you say to that?
So, you know, all of us have some bias, right? So the vaccine task force has a bias from the pharmaceutical industry side where they say whatever we test is whatever you guys should implement. I think when, and that's great when you look at it on face value, if you had all the vaccines you needed, we would go with what the manufacturer recommends. But we have to apply it in our reality where we don't have enough vaccines, where the transmission is happening right now, and where you have, you know, data that shows that in both those trials that people did get that vaccine up to 42 days. We're also basing our opinion on what other jurisdictions have been doing. So the WHO said, you know, if you are stuck and you don't have enough vaccines, you should try and vaccinate the most people with the second dose being given at 6 weeks. And the JCVI in the UK said, you know, based on the AstraZeneca data, which showed that the people who got their second dose 12 weeks after had a better efficacy than those who got it 4 weeks after, we're saying that we're going to do the same with all the vaccine. Granted, the AstraZeneca is not an mRNA, but one would think that, you know, once you present an antigen, whatever way you present it, your own immune system is going to respond to that antigen, you know, making antibodies that not disappear overnight. So I think that between there's going to be some gradient. And what you have to realize, if you vaccinate people now, when you have transmission, even if in 6 to 8 weeks you have a little bit less efficacy, hopefully by that time the transmission will not be as huge, and so you're not going to be as exposed to the virus.
Right. The one thing I'll just say before I let you go, Dr. Quash, is that there was news that 7 residents at a Quebec long-term care home tested positive for COVID-19, but they had been among the first to receive the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine. So you just wonder if we're waiting, you know, 45, 65, up to 90 days, is that a risk then?
True, and it's a great question. And I think what Quebec needs to do is to gather the data to make sure that their vaccine effectiveness is monitored as we extend that interval, so that if they see that, you know, somehow it's just plummets, then you give that second dose there. And I think for those residents in the long-term care facility, we still need to know when they developed their COVID, because it still takes you 2 weeks to build your immunity. So if they developed it before, possibly, you know, their vaccine wasn't effective yet. And the other thing is, in elderly people, it's possible that the efficacy is not 90%, because as you get older, the efficacy tends to decrease. So there's also that to take into account. Not sure that having given a second dose would have changed anything at that point in time. But I don't know. I don't have the data. I think we need to look at that already.
These are ethical and health questions all colliding at an incredibly rapid speed because of the decisions to get who gets it when with this scarce supply. Dr. Quash, I really appreciate you joining us today to at least explain not only the epidemiology and the medical stuff behind it, but the ethical challenges each province is facing as they're rolling out different strategies. Thanks, Doctor. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
All right, you too. So that's interesting. Should you wait for the second dose? I mean, every province is making decisions because who gets the vaccine? And do you keep back doses in freezers while you wait for the supply or not? Those are what every province is doing differently. But before we head to break, some other news you need to know, and we'll pick up on that in the press gallery later. A change of command at the top of Canada's armed forces today. This would normally be a top story, but because of COVID and other issues, it wasn't. But Vice Admiral Art MacDonald becomes the new Chief of the Defence Staff. Check this out.
Canadian Armed Forces members make Canada proud with their unflagging professionalism and get-it-done approach. And they will continue to do so as we deliver on the defence policy, strong, secure, and engaged.
Admiral MacDonald was the head of the Royal Canadian Navy and takes over for General Jonathan Vance as Canada's top soldier. General Vance is the longest-serving chief of the defense staff in this country's history. In an emotional farewell, he saluted the troops. Look at this.
Thank you to the families of our fallen who sacrificed most for Canada and from who I learned the very definition. The very definition of grace.
That is General Vance. He served our country for 39 years, and that was an emotional farewell. A global team of researchers has arrived in the Chinese city where the coronavirus was first detected. They're there to conduct an investigation, finally, into its origins amidst uncertainty Beijing might try to prevent embarrassing discoveries. The group sent to Wuhan by the World Health Organization was approved by President Xi Jinping's government after months and months of diplomatic wrangling. A government spokesperson says there will be, quote, an exchange of views with the Chinese scientists, but gave no indication whether they would be allowed to gather evidence. Remember, some doctors who first blew the whistle in Wuhan, Chinese doctors, were muzzled. Coming up next, we'll continue the vaccine dose debate with CTV News infectious disease specialist Dr. Abdu Sharkawi. Should a second dose be delayed for ethical reasons to give more people the first dose? We pick up the dose debate next on Power Play.
I think everyone understands the importance of vaccinating the elderly, people who are in more vulnerable situations, our frontline health workers, and we are very successful in rolling out vaccinations to them. If there gets to be a moment where suddenly people are very worried about it, perhaps I will revisit and go a little sooner. But while it's going smoothly, I certainly don't need to step forward in line.
Is it smooth? Is there too little supply? Man, that debate is raging. But the federal government plans to scale up its vaccine supply significantly in the second phase. Major General Danny Fortin said Canada will receive 1 million approved vaccines a week by April. He calls this the ramp-up phase. It means that provinces are looking to, you know, they got to distribute that and jab more people in their arms. But before they get that by April, they've got to delay the second dose. But is tampering with vaccine protocols the right thing to do? What does it say about the state of Canada's vaccine supply? Prescott is going to weigh in on all this. Glenn McGregor is, of course, a journalist right here in Ottawa with CTV National News. Great to have you on the program, Glenn. Laura Stone, reporter out of the Globe and Mail's Queen's Park Bureau. She used to be in Ottawa, but she left for no good reason. Dr. Abdu Sharkawi is CTV News' infectious disease specialist. Thanks for joining us. Doc, let me just start with you, and I always thank you for your work, your tireless work here. It seems each province is taking a different protocol on the second dose. Quebec pushing it 90 days, which is double the 42-day recommendation period and more than triple what the Pfizer and Moderna recommendations are. What do you make of all that? Is it safe?
Well, I think it speaks to the fact that there is concern about getting enough people vaccinated, and that's the real issue here. And I don't think it's a supply issue necessarily right now. We can only blame the supply chain if our freezers are empty. And if you look around most of Canada, the freezers are still stocked in many places, and many long-term care facilities in particular have not yet had their staff and their residents vaccinated. So I think it is understandable that there's going to be a little bit of variability in terms of the approach. When you talk about whether it's safe or plausible to get an immune response that is satisfactory from delaying the dose, I think there is some science and some credibility to this. If 90 days is potentially still effective, I don't know quite as confidently if that is the case, but certainly up to 42 days, there's enough reason to believe, based on modeling and looking at some of the data that we have available to us, that that is a very sustainable strategy. And it's really important, I think, to get as many people their first dose as possible. If we can achieve partial immunity in a much broader swath of people, I think that'll definitely serve us better than reserving a second dose and having a cohort of people out there that are completely non-immune and still potentially spreading this virus throughout our communities.
Glenn, what do you make of the politics, and what does it tell you that we're in this double dose debate?
Right. Well, so the science is fuzzy. I mean, there's differing opinions. The totality of the opinions seem to be moving towards this idea that, yeah, you can wait longer. What I find strange about this, though, is letting the provinces make their own decisions in each province when we all kind of share the same biology, right? So there's probably only one right answer here, and yet we have Quebec waiting as long as 90 days, Ontario pretty much staying the course, aiming for the 21 or 28-day interval, depending on the vaccine used. It is odd to me that those decisions are being delegated to the provinces, because we let provinces make their own decisions on healthcare delivery. We don't let them make decisions on the core underlying medical science. That's supposed to come from Health Canada. And I think this is another kind of sign of the Trudeau government has, throughout the pandemic, deferred all these kinds of decisions on lockdowns, on quarantines, all those things being deferred to the provinces. And that is probably politically an expedient decision. But looking back on this a year from now, we're going to be able to say, was it the right decision? Should there have been more federal involvement? And this debate about the vaccine interval, I think, is just kind of the latest iteration of that discussion.
Yeah, Laura, pick up on that and also on what Dr. Sharkawi said, because, you know, people are wondering, are there doses left in freezers or not? The provinces said, no, we're going to run out. They haven't run out yet. The federal government says, no, you've got a schedule. Are they holding back the second dose when they should do what Dr. Sharkawi say and just, you know, bust out every needle they've got? How is it playing out in Ontario?
Well, I think people are growing increasingly impatient at the pace of this. I mean, Ontario has not decided yet, or they haven't said whether they will hold back the second dose. And you can tell that's because they simply don't want to. And the fact that we're even having this debate points to the fact that there simply aren't enough doses to go around. I completely understand the science behind this. I understand the doctor's argument regarding partial immunity. I will just say my grandmother, for instance, got her shot yesterday, and I desperately want her to get her second shot within the 28 days, as I'm sure many other people do who have loved ones or family members or who they themselves are getting the shot within that allotted time to move this along, to get this over with. People want to be able to see their family and friends again. They want to get back to their lives. Ontario released a timeline this week that showed not until March, end of March or early April, is when the broader immunization program would even begin, starting with those over 80 and then decreasing in five-year increments. So it's taking a lot more time, I think, than most Canadians are happy with. And, you know, whether that's the provinces, they might have still have some doses in freezers. But I think that you do have to look to the federal government for simply the sheer scale of how many doses these provinces are receiving.
Yeah, look, the federal supply issue is at the heart of all this. And if you don't have the supply and you're tinkering with the doses, you end up having to do other things like lockdowns and curfews and stay-at-home orders. You're in one right now, Doc. Is it enough in your view to bend the curve?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's the wrong approach, quite frankly. You know, someone just tweeted and I shared it, that they saw someone in an open square in Toronto gathered with a bunch of other people smoking, and a police officer walked by them. I mean, this is taking effect right now on a stay-at-home order. I don't think there's a great deal of confidence in terms of the enforceability of this sort of a measure. I think we saw many instances where people were blatantly violating the private gathering rule. You know, there was a lot of attention paid to a certain barbecue joint that basically publicized all over the internet that they were going to publicly defy public health orders. And our law enforcement was standing around like spectators. So listen, I'm not here to disparage law enforcement, but this is a sad reflection on the fact that our policies when it comes to these sorts of restrictive measures don't seem to have much teeth. I think we're barking up the wrong tree. The people who are adamant about going about their lives and not abiding by public health measures aren't going to be swayed. And they don't seem to be discouraged because there's not much of a precedent for it. And frankly, it's the people who can't do any better that need the help. It's the essential workers who are living in a household of seven or eight or nine other people who have to go to work, who are feeling insecure about their job prospects and of losing their job if they show up. If they don't show up and they're sick, they need access to testing. They need more support for isolation facilities. They need paid security in terms of paid sick days. That's where I think the money is in terms of really attacking the hard hit zones.
Last word. I know Glenn's nodding, and then Laura. Glenn.
I think this is going to be one of the lessons of the 2020-21 pandemic is that it's very hard to get a large population to adhere to public health guidance, no matter how emphatically governments tell them to, and especially when those policies are crafted, as Ontario did, so vaguely and in such a confusing manner that people aren't even sure how they, if they want to abide by it, they don't even know how. What can they do? Can they go to the store? Right. Can they not? It's not been. Governments have not covered themselves in glory during this pandemic. And I think people are going to, when the next one comes, there's going to be a lot of lessons learned about how not to do it. And we're seeing some examples of that right now.
Just Laura, last word to you. But, you know, gosh, there's a difference between that police state, you know, when people are criminal, you know, police are cracking down on people for at their discretion. And Glenn's right. No one knows what the heck the rules seem to be. On the other hand, if they don't enforce it, it's a free for all. That's a tough line that we're asking law enforcement inspectors to walk.
And I think you're seeing the Ontario government now put a lot of faith in people's personal responsibilities, saying we can't go around policing 14 million people's behavior. The government has also released some more information this evening about how this is going to be enforced and trying to put aside some of those fears that people had that we will turn into a quote-unquote police state, saying you're not going to get pulled over in your car if you're just driving around. Being outside isn't necessarily breaching the order. This is simply supposed to be sending a very strong message to people that if you are hosting those private gatherings, if you are having people over, if you are breaching the rules, you will face consequences for that now.
All right, so here's what I want to do. Let's take a break. I want to focus on small businesses. They're struggling to stay afloat. Check this out.
I will not hesitate to shut down any big box store anywhere in this province.
Okay, that's Mr. McNaughton, the Labour Minister in Ontario, telling us he's going to crack down on big box stores. But why does the CEO of the Canadian Federation of Independent Businesses, Dan Kelly, say small businesses is getting crushed? He joins us next on the Press Gallery. Stay right here with PowerPlay. Welcome back to the program. So it's day one of Ontario's 28-day stay-at-home order, and the path looks steep for small businesses already on the verge of collapse. Small and medium-sized retailers can only operate between the hours of 7 a.m. and 8 p.m. They can't provide curbside pickup before or after that. They can't even do drop-offs after that. Remember, Amazon can deliver to your house. Big box stores can, but restaurants can't. The Ontario government says help is on the way in the form of a grant up to $20,000. Is that enough? Are the rules of this stacked against small business and favoring big box stores? Let's bring back the Press Gallery. Our friend Glenn McGregor is back from CTV National News. Laura Stone, Queen's Park reporter with the Globe and Mail. Dan Kelly is our new guest, the president and CEO of the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. And Dr. Sharkawi, our CTV News infectious disease specialist, is also here. Dan, welcome to the cocktail hour party here. You wrote that Ontario rules are, quote, doubling down on unfair and ineffective restrictions for small businesses, that no other province has locked down small retailers while handing huge competitive advantages to big box stores. What do you mean? Why are the rules stacked against small business in Ontario?
We're struggling to figure out what the government's game plan is here, but Ontario remains the only province that has basically shut down to in-store sales every single business in Ontario while allowing the big box stores to remain open to sell whatever they want. Every other province has either shut down big box, including limiting them only to grocery and pharmacy products, so that essential goods are only sold in those streams, or they put a capacity constraint on all businesses of all sizes. Ontario keeps this provision that hands a huge advantage to the big guys and made it worse just this week by basically taking away curbside pickup and delivery after 8 o'clock while allowing the big box guys, Amazon, to do the same thing. We're struggling to understand why a small business owner who drops off a bottle of shampoo at 8:15, that's a bad thing for COVID exposure, but Amazon delivering that to you is okie dokie.
Laura, the Ontario government tried to address that today. They said, no, we're going to help. We got a portal for small business grant. It was announced back in December. It will be launched on Friday. It starts at 10 grand. It goes as high as 20. Is that the answer? Or is what Dan says, the rules are just skewed against small business?
I've got to say that the treatment of small business throughout this has been one of the most baffling responses from the Ford government. And that is simply because it's so off brand with Premier Ford and his contention that he stands up for the little guy. I think what they've done here is really gone after the low hanging fruit of trying to reduce people's mobility, of going into stores. We saw that before Christmas in the lockdown zones. And there must be some sort of pervading fear that people are going to run out of food or they can't close stores where they sell groceries. And that includes the big box stores. And you can see now the way the government is overcompensating with this plan for a big box blitz this weekend, saying we're going to shut anyone down that does not adhere to the rules, because they're just getting killed by their own people over these decisions.
Guys, I got a quick minute. Doc, you see the pressure governments are faced. Everyone wants something open. As a doctor, do you think, gosh, if everyone gets what they want, we're back in square one?
Yeah, you know, I totally empathize with small business owners. I think it's disappointing that this has been the policy change. I certainly don't think that curbside pickup is unsafe. Right. There's certainly no evidence and there's no science to suggest that people outdoors picking up essential goods should be a reason for concern for transmission of this virus.
Guys, unfortunately, I got to wrap it up. That means I owe Glenn McGregor a beer because I wanted to ask him about the difference between Quebec and Ontario. So beer is coming to you, Glenn, Dr. Sharkawi, Dan Kelly, Laura Stone. Great to have all of you here. And thanks for watching, everyone. Be kind. We'll see you back here tomorrow.